RIB English Radio.
Headlines: Iraq's influential Shia cleric Muqtada al-Sadr slams as a terrorist Zionist gathering. The conference held in the semi-autonomous Kurdistan region on normalizing ties with Israel. The Syrian foreign minister says his country is not afraid of Israel and will respond to the regime's call to barbaric attacks in a timely manner. Also, the German chancellor makes a last-ditch push to boost support for her would-be successor, urging people to shape Germany's future by choosing Armin Laschet. Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining us. And with our top story, the Kurdistan regional government says a conference on normalizing ties with Israel held in Iraq's Erbil was neither authorized nor approved by local officials. The KRG said the issues discussed in the conference did not reflect the views and policies of the Kurdistan region. It also pledged to take measures to discover how the meeting was held. Earlier, prominent Iraqi figures, including the country's president and prime minister, slammed the conference as illegal. Separately, senior cleric and political leader Ammar al-Hakim reacted to the conference, calling the Palestinian cause the most important issue for Arab and Muslim nations. Influential Shia cleric Muqtada al-Sadr also decried the meeting.
Erbil must prevent such terrorist Zionist gatherings. Otherwise, the Iraqi government must treat all the participants of such conferences as criminals and arrest them. If Erbil does not prevent such meetings, we will take actions that we are religiously, intellectually, and nationally responsible for.
The leader of Iraq's Asaib al-Haq movement also said the meeting is against Iraqi law and violates human and national principles. Qais al-Khazali said the resistance movement will not keep quiet against cult. Such a great betrayal. Other Iraqi groups, including Fatah Alliance, Popular Mobilization Units, and Kataib Hezbollah, also decried the conference. On Friday, 300 people gathered in the city of Erbil to demand the normalization of ties between Iraq and Israel. The event was organized by a U.S. think tank. Political commentator Firas al-Najm says that Iraqi people are opposed to Israel and normalizing ties with the regime.
In regards to this issue here, we know very well that the Iraqis, in general, the majority of Iraqis are against the Zionist regime, they're against the occupation, they stand with the Palestinian oppressed people, the people of Gaza that are blockaded, over 73 years of occupation. And in nature, the Iraqis reject any normalization with the Zionist regime. And we've seen lots of protests inside Iraq when these other, Arab regimes, as they call them, whatever they want to be called, they're obviously, we know they're illegitimate, such as the Emirati or the Bahraini and other regimes that went towards normalizing and becoming friendly with the Zionist regime. A lot of the Iraqis went out and protested against it and rejected this, as well as Al-Quds Day, the international day that was established by Imam Khomeini. We see thousands of Iraqis that march in the capital city of Baghdad against Israel and against the human rights violations of Israel, and standing towards supporting and extending a hand to the Palestinian people to help them liberate the land of Palestine.
The Syrian army has regained control of a number of villages in the country's southwest. The villages are located in Yarmouk Basin in Dar'a countryside. This comes under a Russian brokered deal that went into effect on September the 1st. The deal had earlier gave the control of Dar al-Balad to the Syrian army and provided for its residents to return to their homes. Under the agreement, militants must either leave the area or surrender their arms if they choose to remain. The return of the territory to the government's control comes after weeks of tensions between the army and militants that prompted Russian mediation, Dar al-Balad was the last stronghold of militants in southern Syria. Syrian Foreign Minister Faisal Miqdad says his country isn't afraid of Israel and its allies. He says Syria will respond in due course to what he calls barbaric attacks by Israel and its allies against the Arab nation. Our correspondent in Damascus, Muhammad Ali, gave us the highlights of Miqdad's remarks.
Syria's Foreign Minister Faisal al-Miqdad said in a televised interview that Syria has proven its ability to foil conspiracies against it. He also welcomed any communication with Western countries. Al-Miqdad clarified that Syria is communicating, actually, with many Western countries, but will not give the names of those countries because there are Western pressures against those Western countries that Syria is communicating with. On the other hand, al-Miqdad also pointed out that there are certain Western countries that supported the United States in imposing a siege on the Syrian people through the so-called Caesar Act, which created, according to al-Miqdad, a lot of economic problems inside Syria. Al-Miqdad said that those sanctions led to imposing inhumane policies that affected primarily Lebanon, and that this Caesar Act only serves Israel, according to Syria's Foreign Minister Faisal al-Miqdad. He also said, with regards to the United States, that while Syria was providing humanitarian assistance to civilians in eastern Al-Ghouta near Damascus at a time when terrorists used to control that area, Washington and its allies, on the other hand, were providing assistance to terrorist organizations via illegal border crossings. He said that the United States is the biggest violator of the UN Charter and human rights, clarifying and pointing out that the current U.S. administration should prove its adherence to this charter, because this, according to al-Miqdad, would end a lot of wars and a lot of pressures.
Iran and Venezuela have reportedly struck an agreement to swap oil for condensates amid U.S. sanctions on both countries. According to Reuters, the deal would last for 6 months but could be extended. Under the agreement, Venezuela's oil company PDVSA would receive condensates to dilute its oil. In return, the National Iranian Oil Company will get shipments of Venezuelan heavy oil that it can market in Asia. A U.S. Treasury spokesperson said the department was, quote, concerned about reports of the swap contract. The official said Washington would continue to enforce its sanctions regimes on both Tehran and Caracas. Iran has sent 21.5 tons of humanitarian aid to Afghanistan. This is the second humanitarian aid from Iran to the war-ravaged country since earlier this month. Amin Alami reports from the Afghan capital, Kabul.
This is the second time that this aircraft that belongs to Iran's Mahan Airlines lands here in Kabul International Airport since the beginning of September to deliver tons of humanitarian aids to war-weary Afghans who are experiencing difficult days due to poverty and joblessness.
This is the second time that we have brought some food for the Afghani people. Before the previous time, it was about 25 pounds. 20 tons of food and 5 tons of medicine. This time it is all food.
The flow of humanitarian aid by Iran to Afghanistan is welcomed by all in Afghanistan, saying their country needs more assistance to save the lives of millions of ordinary people who are at risk of hunger and malnutrition. They also believe there must be a transparent process to distribute the aids to most needy ones.
Given that poverty and joblessness are on the rise in Afghanistan, I think it would be better for donors to first provide food and then pay serious attention to the healthcare sector.
We have been receiving international aid since 2001 during the rule of Karzai and Ghani over Afghanistan, but all to no avail, because poverty is still bothering our people. So my suggestion is that these aids must be distributed first among the most vulnerable, poor and jobless people.
Iran has pledged to continue its support to Afghanistan and its people in different economic, humanitarian, political and security fields. This comes as Taliban takeover in mid-August suddenly changed the situation in Afghanistan, and of course, it also brought some major changes in the policies of some Western states, mainly the U.S. toward Afghanistan, such as freezing Afghanistan's assets. The freeze of Afghanistan's reserves by the U.S. is labeled as an illegal move by Washington against ordinary people. That is why Afghans widely condemn the move and ask why ordinary Afghans should pay the price of Washington's defeat in Afghanistan. However, Afghans look to supportive stances and moves of some neighboring countries like Iran as an example of honesty and true cooperation with Afghans. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Muslim pilgrims are marching toward Iraq's holy city of Karbala to mark Arba'in. The pilgrims are arriving in the city to observe the 40th day after the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein, the grandson of the Prophet Muhammad. This year, Arba'in falls on September the 28th. Prior to the pandemic, the event drew millions each year, but now the Iraqi government has limited the number of foreign pilgrims. It has allowed only 40,000 foreign visitors into the country, many of them Iranians. Imam Hussein and dozens of his companions were martyred during the Battle of Karbala with a tyrant of their time over 13 centuries ago. They were killed on the day of Ashura. The president of the British Automobile Association says panic buying rather than shortages is causing queues at UK petrol stations. Edmund King said the problem should pass in a matter of days if drivers just stick to filling up when they need to. He said there is plenty of fuel at source and that a shortage of truck drivers was only a localized problem earlier in the week. On Saturday, panic buying continued throughout Britain's petrol stations. Worker shortages are a growing problem in Britain, which had a record 1 million job vaccines between June and August, or I should say job vacancies between June and August. Now, in a U-turn on its post-Brexit immigration policy, Britain has decided to issue over 10,000 temporary work visas to truck drivers and poultry workers to ease chronic staff shortages.
Britain is witnessing long queues outside fuel stations, including the capital, London, following fuel rationing at some distribution centers and temporary closure of many retail stations. British Petroleum said it has closed more than 1,000 of its fuel distribution stations, citing a lack of both unleaded and diesel grades. The multinational gas and oil company blamed the closure on a shortage of truck drivers. The government has cautioned against panic buying, saying there is no shortage at refineries. Britons have, however, paid little heed to the pledge, as long queues of motorists have been forming outside filling stations since Saturday morning. Retailers have warned that the clock is ticking for the government and that it only had just days to prevent a significant disruption in festive preparations in the run-up to Christmas, which is only 3 months away. The administration of Prime Minister Boris Johnson says it is looking at temporary measures to address the issue. British media say the government is mulling allowing some 5,000 truckers into Britain on short-term work visas in a bid to alleviate the acute labor shortage. The UK's Road Haulage Association, however, says Britain needs 100,000 drivers to meet the demand. The UK opposition leader has blasted the government for what he called letting the people down amid the fuel crisis.
We're obviously at a crucial time for the country, and this government is letting people down so badly, whether it's hammering working people on tax and universal credit, whether it's shortages of food and fuel. I've just been up the road, three petrol stations, one of them with a massive queue and two of them with no fuel.
The driver shortage is partly blamed on Britain's withdrawal from the European Union, which has resulted in tens of thousands of truckers from EU member states leaving the UK. But it has been exacerbated by the coronavirus pandemic. The shortage has also set Britain on path for food chaos, since it has led to disruption in deliveries to supermarkets and fast food chains. The fuel issue comes as Britain is also facing a record high surge in natural gas prices, with wholesale prices being up to 250% since January. Experts say households will get hit by surging power bills this coming winter, while small energy firms are at risk of collapsing. Supermarkets and food firms say the price rise has caused a shortage of carbon dioxide, which is threatening UK supplies of meat and fresh produce.
German Chancellor Angela Merkel urges her people to vote for her would-be successor Armin Laschet in the country's parliamentary elections.
Armin Laschet is characterized by building bridges, taking people with him. He has shown throughout his political life that he can do this, and not just in theory, but with passion and heart.
Opinion polls show that Laschet, the leader of center-right Christian Democratic Union, is trailing closely behind the Christian Social Union's Olaf Scholz. The Green Party's candidate, Annalena Baerbock, is in the third place. More than 60 million Germans are eligible to vote on Sunday to choose their representatives to the lower house of the federal parliament, the Bundestag. Merkel, who has been in power since 2005, plans to stand down after the election. Russia has called on the United States to stop imposing its development model on other nations.
President Biden has recently announced the rejection of military methods used to, as he put it, remake other countries. We expect the U.S. to take one step further and reject any other methods of imposing their development model on others, not only military ones.
Sergei Lavrov made the remarks during a speech to the United Nations General Assembly. Lavrov highlighted his country's role in Afghanistan, Libya, and Syria. He said Moscow has been contributing to stabilizing the situation in Syria within the framework of the Astana process and has been working with all Libyan parties to implement political reforms. On Afghanistan's crisis, Lavrov stressed that Russia has been constructively engaged in the promotion of an Afghan resolution. He said recognizing the Taliban is not currently under consideration.
We don't have any information about anybody having turned to us for the accreditation. There is an ambassador working in Moscow who was appointed by the previous government, and the question of international recognition of the Taliban at the present juncture is not on the table. We will proceed from that premise if we receive a request for the appointment of a new ambassador.
The remarks come after the Taliban named a UN envoy setting up a showdown over Afghanistan's seat at the world body. Taliban Foreign Minister Amir Khan Muttaqi on Monday nominated the group's spokesman Suhail Shaheen as Afghanistan's UN ambassador. Ghulam Isakzai, the current UN ambassador who represents Afghanistan's ousted government, has also asked to renew his UN accreditation. The Taliban seized power in Afghanistan last month. That does it for this edition of World News. Thanks for your company.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The costs and consequences of America's 21st century wars have by now been well documented. A staggering $8 trillion in expenditures and more than 380,000 civilian deaths, as calculated by Brown University's Cost of War project. The question of who has benefited most from the military spending, unfortunately, received far less attention. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by William D. Harting, writer. This article is published under the heading Corporate America Cashed In on Post-9/11 Pentagon Spending Surge. Stay tuned, please, for the second part of this article. The Afghan reconstruction process was similarly replete with examples of fraud, waste, and abuse. These included a U.S.-appointed economic task force that spent $43 million constructing a gas station essentially in the middle of nowhere that would never be used. Another $150 million on lavish living quarters for U.S. economic advisors. And $3 million for Afghan police patrol boats that would prove similarly useless. Perhaps most disturbingly, a congressional investigation found that a significant portion of $2 billion worth of transportation contracts issued to U.S. and Afghan firms ended up as kickbacks to warlords and police officials or as payments to the Taliban to allow large convoys of trucks to pass through areas they controlled, sometimes as much as $1,500 per truck or up to $500,000 for each 300-truck convoy. In 2009, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton stated that one of the major sources of funding for the Taliban is the protection money paid from just such transportation contracts. A second stream of revenue for corporations tied to those wars went to private security contractors, some of which guarded U.S. facilities or critical infrastructure like Iraqi oil pipelines. The most notorious of them all was, of course, Blackwater, a number of whose employees were involved in a 2007 massacre of 17 Iraqis in Baghdad's Nisour Square. They opened fire on civilians at a crowded intersection while guarding a U.S. embassy convoy. The attack prompted ongoing legal and civil cases that continued into the Trump era, when several perpetrators of the massacre were pardoned by the president. In the wake of those killings, Blackwater was rebranded several times, first as XE Services and then as Academy, before eventually merging with the Triple Canopy, another private contracting firm. Blackwater founder Eric Prince then separated from the company, but he has since recruited private mercenaries on behalf of the United Arab Emirates for deployment to the civil war in Libya in violation of a United Nations arms embargo. Prince also unsuccessfully proposed to the Trump administration that he recruit a force of private contractors meant to be the backbone of the U.S. war effort in Afghanistan. Another task taken up by private firms Titan and CACI International was the interrogation of Iraqi prisoners. Both companies had interrogators and translators on the ground about Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq, a site where such prisoners were brutally tortured. The number of personnel deployed and the revenues received by security and reconstruction contractors grew dramatically as the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan wore on. The Congressional Research Service estimated that by March 2011, there were more contractor employees in Iraq and Afghanistan, that is about 155,000, than American uniform military personnel, that is 145,000. In its August 2011 final report, the Commission on Wartime Contracting in Iraq and Afghanistan put the figure even higher, stating that contractors represent more than half of the U.S. presence in the contingency operations in Iraq and Afghanistan, and at times employing more than a quarter million people. While an armed contractor who had served in the Marines could earn as much as $200,000 annually in Iraq, about three-quarters of the contractor workforce there was made up of people from countries like Nepal or the Philippines or Iraqi citizens. Poorly paid, at times they received as little as $3,000 per year. A 2017 analysis by the Cost of War Project documented abysmal labor conditions and major human rights abuses inflicted on foreign nationals working on the U.S.-funded projects in Afghanistan, including false imprisonment. theft of wages, and death and injuries in areas of conflict. With the U.S. military in Iraq reduced to a relatively modest number of armed advisors and no American forces left in Afghanistan, such contractors are now seeking foreign clients. For example, a U.S. firm, Tire One Group, which was founded by a former employee of Blackwater, trained four of the Saudi operatives involved in the murder of a Saudi journalist and U.S. resident Jamal Khashoggi, an effort funded by the Saudi regime. As the New York Times noted when it broke that story, such issues are likely to continue as American private military contractors increasingly look to foreign clients to shore up their business as the United States scales back overseas deployments after two decades of war. And adding one more factor to the two-decade so-called war on terror, explosion of corporate profits. Overseas arms sales also rose sharply in this era. The biggest and most controversial market for U.S. weaponry in recent years has been the West Asia-North Africa region, particularly sales to countries like Saudi Arabia and the UAE regimes, which have been involved in a devastating war in Yemen, as well as fueling conflicts elsewhere in the region. Donald Trump made the most noise about the West Asia arms sales and their benefits to U.S. economy. However, the giant weapons-producing corporations actually sold more weaponry to Saudi Arabia on average during the Obama administration, including three major offers in 2010 that totaled more than $60 billion for combat aircraft, attack helicopters, armored vehicles, bombs, missiles, and guns, virtually an entire arsenal. Many of those systems were used by the Saudis in their intervention in Yemen, which has now involved the killing of thousands of civilians in indiscriminate airstrikes and the imposition of a blockade that contributed substantially to the death of nearly a quarter of a million people to date. Reining in the excess profits of weapons contractors and preventing waste, fraud, and abuse by private firms involved in supporting U.S. military operations will ultimately require reduced spending on war and our preparations for war. So far, unfortunately, Pentagon budgets only continue to rise and yet more money flows to the big five weapons firms. To alter this remarkably unvarying pattern, a new strategy is needed, one that increases the role of American diplomacy while focusing on emerging and persistent non-military security challenges. National security needs to be redefined, not in terms of a new Cold War with China, but to forefront crucial issues like pandemics and climate change. It's time to put a halt to the direct and indirect foreign military interventions the United States regime has carried out in Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, Somalia, Yemen, and so many other places in this century. Otherwise, we are in for decades of more war profiteering by weapons contractors reaping massive profits with impunity.
Food for thought.
Hello, dear friends, and do pay attention to what the Holy Prophet's eighth infallible heir, Imam Ali ibn Musa al-Reza, peace be upon him, has cautioned us against in order not to drift away from God's mercy. The friend of any individual is his mind, and his enemy is his ignorance.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Stories from the past. Stories from the lives of the infallibles. Stories from different parts of the world. On the Lantern.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, brothers and sisters. Thank you so very much for joining us on today's brand new episode of The Lantern. Through the chaos and the razzle-dazzle and the routine of life, it's very easy to get distracted from our ultimate and original purpose. And from the destination that we have been put on this earth to reach. Sometimes, even if we're not necessarily striving to reach some extent of profound, almost unachievable success, life itself and the constant engagement with material things will distract us from our divine purpose, from our spirituality, from stopping for a moment and being present. Let's listen to a short story regarding the distractions of life and how life sometimes finds the strangest way to draw our attention back to what really matters. And we're going to be right back.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in the name of Allah, Dear friends, salam alaikum. So welcome to this episode of Lantern. As usual, we have an interesting story at the beginning of our program. A successful young executive was riding his brand new Jaguar down a neighborhood street when he noticed a kid darting out from between parked cars. He slowed down a little, but as he appeared near it, a brick smashed into his car's door. He slammed on the brakes and drove back to the place where the brick has been thrown. The furious man jumped out of his car and caught the nearest kid shouting, "What was that all about? What the heck did you do to my car? Why did you do it?" The young boy was a little scared but was very polite and apologetic. "I'm sorry, mister, I didn't know what else to do," he pleaded. "I had to throw the brick because no one else would stop for my call to help." With tears rolling down his cheeks, he pointed towards the parked cars and said, "It's my brother. He rolled off the curb and fell off his wheelchair and he's badly hurt. I can lift him up." A sobbing boy asked the man, "Would you please help me get him back into his wheelchair? He's hurt and he's too heavy for me." The young man was moved beyond words and tried to swallow the rapidly swelling lump in his throat. He hurriedly lifted the other kid from the spot and put him back to the wheelchair. He also helped the little kid with his bruises and cuts. When he thought that everything will be okay, he went back to his car. "Thank you, sir, and God bless you," said the grateful kid. The young man was too shaken up for any words, so the man simply watched the little boy pushed the wheelchair-bound brother down the sidewalk. It was a long and a slow ride back home to the man. When he came out of the car, he looked at his dented car door. The damage was noticeable, but he did not bother to repair it. He kept the dent to remind him the message. Do not go through life so fast that someone has to throw a brick at you to get your attention.
The Lantern.
Under the light of lantern, we'll look at the story which indicates a moral aspects of our life.
Because one of the most salient qualities of this world is to distract us. وَمَا الْحَيَاةُ الدُّنْيَا إِلَّا لَهُونَ وَلَعِبٌ. As Allah says in the Quran, this life is nothing but, you know, distractions and vain actions and means for entertainment. And that's why it's really important for us to constantly practice awareness and mindfulness and to always be on guard, to keep ourselves conscious of the things that are going on around us. It's very important for us to be careful of not becoming self-centered, not thinking that the world and the universe and all these material means and instruments we see around us have been placed to serve us and us only. Everyone is living their own lives, trying to reach their full potential and benefit from life to its fullest capacity. But if we constantly indulge in the material blessings, actually, that Allah has granted us, without actually taking notice of the origin of these blessings, the purpose we've been blessed with them, what we're supposed to do with them, where is it going to lead us, then sooner or later these blessings will be taken away from us. When Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in the Holy Quran that if you thank me, I will increase you, it doesn't only mean that I will increase for you your blessings, it also means I will increase your capacity. I will expand you when you are aware, when you are mindful of where these blessings come from and what you're supposed to do with them, you create in yourself that foundation, that capacity to receive more. And I will give more to you in accordance to that. So regarding the story of the Jaguar driver and the little boy who ended up throwing a brick at him as a cry for help, this could happen a lot in our lives, especially in the case of our loved ones. Through my life, especially through a period where I had the opportunity to work with children, looking back at it now, was one of the most traumatizing experiences of my life. Not that children are traumatizing, but the factors that comes along with it, working with kids and families is full of drama. I noticed a lot parents who think that what they're doing is for the betterment of their family and, you know, their life quality and to provide their children with a better future. What they neglect, however, is the child's now. Children have no concept whatsoever of abstract things that could or could not occur in the future. Children don't look ahead an hour, 2 hours, 2 days, 4 weeks. You promise a child something and you tell them that I'll give it to you in a week, I'll give it to you in 6 months. That child will lose all motivation to try to achieve that, because for them, time just moves so much slower, and 6 months from now feels like a lifetime. And compared to their life period, lifespan, it really is a lifetime. I, as someone in my late 20s, 6 months seems like nothing. As for a child that's 3 years old, 5 years old, 6 years old, even a teenager, 6 months really feels long and tedious. So my point is that, especially as parents, or even as siblings, or as a spouse, or as a close friend, we sometimes get so distracted in, you know, planning for the future, trying to make things better for them, or, you know, dedicating ourselves to a certain task at hand, whether it's our career, whether it's maintaining the home, whether it's our studies, you know, for those who are students of the seminary, that we lose perspective of what's really important. And then by doing that, we're actually taking that blessing for granted. That blessing could sometimes be our children, our family, our spouse, our loved ones. It could be our health, our youth. And then life ends up throwing a brick at our face and knocking our teeth out just to get us to slow down. Thank you for being with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
That was all for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Inshallah, we continue this topic on the next episode. Till then, may Allah bless all of you. Fi amanillah. Ala bi dhikrillahi tatma'innul qulub.
The Light.
Another groundbreaking archaeological discovery in Peru is now catching attention. 800-year-old human remains south of the capital, Lima, highlight the ancient burial rituals in the South American country. The remains of 8 adults and children buried in a common tomb were found by a group of workers laying gas pipes at the site. They were buried with food, dishes, and musical instruments, including flutes. Archaeologists say that the 8 people lived in the ancient town of Chitka, some 60 kilometers from Lima. They say some of the bodies were buried with the shells on their heads and had bags with cocoa leaves inside them. They say the discovery will shed more light on the pre-Hispanic history of the region. Another 30 human remains had been discovered in Chilca in 2018.
A taxi company in Thailand has turned its vehicles into mini vegetable gardens to help its drivers who are out of work due to the coronavirus pandemic.
The point of this project is so that employees have something to do to reduce stress. To a certain extent, it has helped with reducing our stress, but it isn't really the answer to the situation right now. Even though the drivers and the staff are able to harvest the vegetables for food, it's just part of solving the problem. I think the government should also step in to help us too.
The taxi company is growing vegetables on the roofs and hoods of 300 disused taxis that are parked idly. Prolonged COVID-19 lockdowns have affected the drivers' income negatively so that they are unable to pay the lease of their vehicles. Therefore, working in these gardens has reduced their stress and provided the drivers and their families with food. Amongst the thousands of shops in Tehran's Grand Bazaar lies a tiny tea house with a long history that attracts visitors with its famous treats. Haj Ali Darvish Tea House is the smallest and oldest tea house in the Iranian capital. The 2-meter-wide cafe belongs to 63-year-old Kazim Maputian, who took over the century-old business from his father. He serves a wide range of teas, but his signature is the tea of kindness, a mixture of mint, lemon, and saffron. His tea house is the most famous in Tehran, serving some 200 customers every day. It used to be a tourist attraction before the coronavirus pandemic. Haj Ali Darvish Tea House was enlisted as Iran's intangible cultural heritage in 2016. Farmers working on the border between Venezuela and Colombia have discovered a tusk that is believed to belong to an American mastodon from 16,000 years ago.
We went to the place and the fossil was there, and then we realized it was something very important. We rescued it because there was a risk of it being lost, and at this moment it's in the Archaeological and Paleontological Museum of Agualinda.
The experts say the discovery would help them with complementing information about extinct animals and ancient settlements. They say the finding of the tusk in the site would increase its potential contribution to scientific researchers. The discovery of mega faunal fossils in South America has been common over the past decades. In 2019, more than 800 mammoth bones were discovered near Mexico. A group of Cambodian students has designed a manned drone in an attempt to beat traffic. The drone has 8 propellers and a school chair for the pilot's seat. It can carry a human weighing up to 60 kilograms. The creative students say the drone is still in its early stages of development and testing. Equipped with 4 batteries, the human carrier drone can fly up to 4 meters and around 10 minutes above the ground.
Here we have big problems related to traffic jams, so we did some research about this before building the drone. We came up with this drone project as we had the idea that we wanted to solve some problems for our society by making a drone taxi, as well as investing drones for firefighters to help put out fires.
The prototype can or has cost around $20,000 to build. The designers say they need 2 more years to complete the project. The school has expressed hope that the drone could be used in everyday life.
Iran's capital, Tehran, has hosted an art show themed with Aspiration for Peace. Organized by the Economic Cooperation Organization, the event seeks to shed light on the beauty of a global peace through the language of art. Yusuf Jalali reports.
Each one of these delicate works of art are created by an artist from a different country, each trying a unique way to highlight the need for lasting peace in the world. Dubbed Aspiration for Peace, the art gallery is organized by Echo Cultural Institute with the aim of promoting global peace through the language of art.
By holding this event, we want to send a message of peace to all countries. We invited diplomats from all embassies here to gather and unite and celebrate a peaceful gathering. Also, the artworks showcased here are created by artists from various countries, and this represents how beautiful it is for nations to live peacefully.
Art helps connect different civilizations and nations. It helps us bridge the cultural gaps and find commonalities. This will establish mutual understanding and harmony among nations, and therefore conflicts can be avoided.
In some of the artworks, images immediately communicate with the audience, even if faces are veiled. These pictures try to narrate the story of Afghan women and an uncertain future that they're facing amid the Taliban's takeover of power in Afghanistan.
The events that are taking place in my country, Afghanistan, are so painful. It might take hours to tell you how hard it is for an Afghan girl to live in insecurity and uncertainty. But through the language of art, you can understand all these words without the need for translation.
The art show was held on the occasion of the International Day of Peace. Observed every year on September 21st, the occasion was introduced by the UN General Assembly as a chance to strengthen the ideals of peace through observing 24 hours of nonviolence and ceasefire.
A picture is worth a thousand words, and indeed, no words can be as strong as the strokes of an artist in speaking the beauty of peace. And this is how the universal language of art transcends the political and cultural boundaries and touches the hearts of viewers, no matter what language they speak. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
French slackliner has wowed watching crowds in Paris by crossing from the Eiffel Tower to the other side of the River Seine. Nathan Poulenc walked across a rope suspended 70 meters above the ground. He finished the 600-meter course in half an hour. On one point, he sat and lay on the rope before arriving at his destination, the Chaillot Theatre. The 27-year-old daredevil practiced 4 years to perform this show. Poulenc said that he was staying focused during the walk, and that was very challenging.
When I was young, I had fear of heights, and I learned to contain it. During the performance, I really didn't feel it. I really didn't have that problem. I felt some stress over starting it, but no vertigo, no.
Poulenc said that it was an uneasy experience, but he was happy to share it with the public. The athlete started slacklining 10 years ago. In 2019, he performed a 510-meter-long walk between two skyscrapers in Paris.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
SpaceX's first all-private crew have successfully concluded the first orbital mission in history with no professional astronauts on board. The four tourists on board the SpaceX Dragon capsule landed in the Atlantic Ocean off the coast of Florida after spending 3 days in space. The capsule was then transported by helicopter to the Kennedy Space Center, where on Wednesday they took off aboard. During the flight, the crew members' vital signs were monitored to study the effects of the environment of space on complete novices. The Inspiration4 mission was an effort aimed at encouraging the democratization of space. It sought to prove that the cosmos are accessible to crew that have not been handpicked nor been in training for years. Visitors and keepers of a zoo in the Peruvian capital, Lima, are thrilled over the birth of 8 baby penguins from the vulnerable Humboldt species. Zookeepers say the chicks were hatched in July and they're expecting 6 more additions later in October. Currently, the newborns spend their days resting in their nests and being fed by their parents. The Huachipa Zoo currently has 42 Humboldt penguins and is working on recovering the species population.
We have 8 2-month-old chicks and 6 eggs. In 42 days, those eggs will hatch and the chicks will come out. The important thing about Humboldt penguins is that we are recovering their population because they are in a vulnerable state. We are increasing their populations with the breeding we are doing in the zoo.
Researchers say a maximum of less than 10,000 Humboldt penguins are left in the wild, with their population size undergoing extreme fluctuations. The species face emerging threats from agricultural activities to their own vulnerability to predators. The Humboldt penguins are only found along the Pacific coast of Chile and Peru and are enlisted as threatened species by the International Union for Conservation of Nature.
A passionate Indian teacher has turned a road into a classroom and houses walls into blackboards to make up for the prolonged school shutdown caused by COVID-19. Deep Narayan Nayak is working with nearly 60 students in a small tribal village in the eastern state of West Bengal. He started to teach students, most of whom are first-generation learners, last year, when all local schools closed under lockdown restrictions. Nayak says that he was worried about his students' education since many of them did not have access to smartphones or internet connection. But thanks to his initiative, his students can learn everything from popular nursery rhymes to the importance of masks.
We are teaching children everything, how to maintain social distancing, how to wear a mask, what is the importance of masks and hand washing. The children came forward and participated in this initiative, and they are also educating others.
The parents and villagers are grateful to Nayak, saying that they are happy their children are no longer wasting their time loitering around in the village. Nayak is now popularly known as the teacher of the street among the villagers. Water scarcity is a significant and accelerating problem for people worldwide. A UK-based charity, WaterAid, has installed life-size ice sculptures in London to show the fragility of water and the threat posed by climate change.
Climate change is water change, so it means that droughts will get longer, which means that previous reliable sources of the water just won't be there. It means that flooding, sometimes in the same country, becomes very severe, polluting water sources and destroying infrastructure. But it also means unpredictability. Water sources that people have relied on for generations, for farming as well as for their health and hygiene, are just no longer there.
Farr, a policy analyst for WaterAid, said people with no access to clean water are bearing the brunt of climate change. The sculptures opposite Tower Bridge are part of the charity's fight, which calls on the British government to increase funding for climate adaptation. The sculptures show how clean water is essential for human survival, with some being depicted carrying buckets and pots in search of water. The environmental group wanted to highlight the threat climate change poses to our planet.
Egyptian archaeologists have completed the renovation of a tomb of an ancient king, providing a rare glimpse into the world's oldest known pyramid. The 4,700-year-old Step Pyramid was built during the reign of King Djoser. The southern tomb is the second for the king, and his smaller It is smaller compared to royal tombs. Some researchers suggest it was built for the preservation of Djoser's internal organs, while others say it was built symbolically. It had been undergoing renovation for 15 years before being reopened to the public.
120 tons of